Join the battle to defend science. Get your copy of my book today. All right, here's what we were talking about. We were talking about Donald Trump, and well, we were talking about Andrew Tate first. And then we were debating, is Andrew Tate actually like a, does he know what he's doing? Is he like, you can think that what he's doing and what he says is despicable, but he can still be like a genius, manipulator, business person, tactician, whatever. We were talking about, is Andrew Tate, is he an evil genius or is he like lucky or whatever? And then we didn't talk about that very long, but we got into Donald Trump and I kind of said, what did I say? He's a bumbling, fumbling, stumbling, grumpy, old, ignorant piece of shit guy, right? And that just seems to resonate with people for some reason when he says things. But there are things that he says that are true. There are some economic things he says that are definitely true. But my very different take, and I'm happy for somebody to tell me I'm an idiot for this, but I think that Donald Trump is the new hippie. He is a counterculture person. What do I mean by that? When we think of countercultures, it's like the hippie movement, and they're all about like reinventing the way we look at things socially or whatever. Well, the mainstream in America, like in the media, in what you see on TV and all this stuff, it's very much left-wing stuff, right? And one of the things that makes him the most popular is when he stands up there and like he puts people in their place and he says, people are so sick and tired of all the tone policing and all that kind of bullshit, that I think that makes huge, no, like literally tens of millions of people like Donald Trump, even though they don't particularly care for that many of the things he says. Do you know who David Portnoy is?
Yeah.
That's kind
of the Barstool Sports guy.
Yeah. He's very much like socially on the left. He's one of those people that thinks, look, I just think that transgender lesbians should be able to shoot anybody that walks onto their weed farm, you know, like the complete, the complete spectrum, but definitely like socially, obviously very much like libertarian left. Right. And he likes Donald Trump because of the in your faceness sort of things, but he has at other times been like when Trump, when there were like the abortion stuff, then David Portnoy came out and said, fuck Donald Trump, you know? So it's kind of, that's just, it's a weird thing, but I think he's the new counterculture. Like,
I think it's definitely possible. I don't know. This might sound like a weird way to analogize it. Yeah. Yeah, we're gonna make an analogous.
An analogous.
But what is it? I feel like the way that he talks, it's really similar to the way that people on like a TikTok live will talk. It's like he knows that if you say controversial statements, you know, things that will really rile people up, He knows that that's going to drive, you know, I guess in his campaign, I don't know what the best analogy for it would be, but it'll drive engagement, right? Like if you get people arguing, you get people going back and forth, it's just publicity for him, whether it's good or bad, it's putting his name out there. And it's not like people don't know him, but,
yeah,
I don't know. It keeps him on the forefront of their mind, if that makes sense.
Yeah. He's what he's tapped into, which is like, you know, you go to business school and they teach you business ethics, right? But then you go into the real world and what is every business person like? They're as ruthless as can possibly be, right? And with politics, I think there are things that politicians know. Like if you appeal to emotion, you can create a cult and get anybody to believe anything you want, right? Well, not anybody, but you can sway the general populace in any direction you want. And politicians have known that for a really long time. I just think that like before the 90s, they were wise enough not to do that because they understood that that would be catastrophic for the health of the nation. But really starting in the 90s with Newt Gingrich, that's just what they started doing. And Trump is better than almost anybody else at these emotional, I guess you could call it like an appeal to emotion and getting people fired up and riled up, just like you said. So he's a political genius for it, but he's an evil genius.
But it's almost like the,
real quick, I, or maybe not, because I go back and forth with him. I can't tell if he's doing it on purpose or if he just is being this, or if he doesn't realize the gravity of what he does and says. It just happens to work out for him because he can't read, right? And he's such a bumbling, he's so ignorant of world history, of American history, and just how things in general work. He knows how money works, I guess, but I don't even know if that's true. I think he just has enough money to hire lawyers to allow him to rig the game for himself. But he's just so ignorant that at some point you just go, look, he actually just is a moron and he's just lucked his way through this. Or like when you listen to him do other interviews, like with Theo Von, you're like, this guy almost doesn't sound like a maniac. It's crazy.
Yeah. And I think it's all on purpose. I think that it definitely is, like, I don't know, putting a certain character out there for people to try to grasp onto. Because I mean,
I can't tell. It's so,
it's really hard to say, in all honesty.
Yeah. Blue, what were you going to say?
Yeah, if I dare jump in, first of all, no. Like there's so much to unpack. I mean, the hovering debate and question that I wonder, it's like, to what extent, why does a Trump, why does a Andrew Tate, why does an Elon Musk have so much credibility towards other people? Is it their success? Is it the appearance of success? Because you say, like, is it just dumb luck? I mean, if you look at some of Trump's past interviews, he's really stuck to his guns. He's been very, very consistent. He's not, it doesn't seem like he's suddenly changed and applied some kind of role playing to appeal to a niche, or like you said, like a counterculture. I'm not American myself, but it seems like in America, there seems to still be a hunger and need for tradition, for values, for things that it feels like the left seems to be drifting away from. Like we're trying to be a little bit more like the Roman Empire, a little liberal and a little wild and let's everybody do whatever we want.
Hey, did it end well for the Roman Empire? I don't remember.
You know, I mean, for a while they did great.
Yeah, they had a Pax Romana, and then things happened.
So my question before I go on too much is just like, is it really dumb luck, or like are they doing something that maybe is against, you know, what we stand for, but they stand for something that other people really appeal to, you know?
I think luck has a massive role in it. Cause I mean, like I said, dude, go on Instagram, you'll find, you know, 50 Trumps in a single comment section. They're all saying the same shit. It's the exact same mindset. The only difference is nobody knows who they are versus Trump. Fucking everybody knows who he is. I really think that's all it comes down to. Cause there are thousands of people, millions that believe the same shit. They just don't have any platform to put out their thoughts.
Yeah. He, that thing you're saying, Blue, about him being consistent, I'm trying to look, I can't find it, but he did an interview with Piers Morgan back in like 2013 or 14, and he says all of the exact same stuff. And so, yeah, he's been,
there's actually a recent video that's been put out that shows like his first interview ever where he seems to speak normal.
Yeah.
All the way up to him telling about being shot in the ear. Guy, despite like how I feel about him, he's been fucking consistent, you know?
For the most part, he's flip-flopped on some things, but yeah. Sorry, there was a super chat here. Here in the UK, all we hear is the bombastic, rude things he says. The media focuses way too much on what he says at his rallies instead of what he did. That has been the kind of his advantage. And again, this is a thing where maybe he does this on purpose. People, when normally when people say, like some scandal opens up, like, oh, that was just a distraction so that the media would focus on that so they can secretly pass this bill that's actually really terrible. Normally when I hear that, I'm like, yeah, I mean, it's not impossible, but this is conspiratorial thinking and I don't think you have any evidence for it. But with Trump, you know, every single day, the news just turned into 24/7 breaking news, breaking news, breaking news, because he tweeted something. And it's like, nobody cares, or you shouldn't care what he says. We should be focusing on what he does, because, like, getting people upset that he said something about, like, I don't know, just he went on Twitter and said, what's her name, Malika, whatever, had plastic surgery and she was bleeding from her nose when she came to Mar-a-Lago one time. People will spend an entire day on that instead of, like, the material things that he does. And I think that was his biggest advantage, because it just made people more blind to the policy stuff and bickering over stuff that doesn't matter, which is why I really love what the left is doing now with Tim Walz just saying, by the way, I was calling him Tim Waltz for like 3 weeks before I realized it's Walz. Balls to the Walz. When he just started calling them weird, I was like, yes, when they make these like social political commentaries, just laugh at them, make them seem unserious, because that kneecaps them. And it just like, stop taking the comments so seriously, and then we can focus on stuff that matters more. So that's just kind of my two cents about
it. I think Shane Gillis said it really good, dude. Fucking when he was talking about how Trump debates, he comes in against these 40-year lifelong politicians. He says, fuck the politics. And he's just like, Ted Cruz's wife, ugly as a dog. Like shit like yeah, that. It's like, oh, shit.
I mean, the politicians do deserve to be clowned on. And that's what he did right away that made him really popular, I think. Because although he basically became Darth Vader. He became the establishment. He is the establishment. He is the swamp. He didn't drain it or anything like that. But all the stuff he was saying, if you go watch the debates in like 2015, the way he talked down to all of those Republicans, and even in one debate, he said something and he got booed. And he got on the microphone. He said, do you know why they're booing? Because all these other people up here, they're lobbyists, bought all the front row tickets for this event we're having, and they're the ones in the front rows here booing, and you hear them on the microphone. And like, for him to just call that out was insane, because the Republicans don't do that and the Democrats don't do that. You know, at the Democratic National, this was Chris Cuomo of all people pointed this out, but like at the DNC, they have all these pretty faces and people that are supposed to represent something go up there and give speeches. Meanwhile, up in the booths, there are millionaires and billionaires paying huge amounts of money to sit up. Basically, a person gives a speech saying, we're going to make sure that blank, blank, blank happens. Meanwhile, the people that have bought and sold the Democratic Party are up in the booths just sitting up there going, yeah, we're not going to do that. Literally, the guy that gave a speech after Bernie Sanders was a billionaire. So it's like, for him to call that out was extremely based. So good on him. And you know what? People should just use his own words against him for things like that.
But Peterson, I feel like we're missing one key thing, is that we're not talking about someone that's running for presidency that's never been in office. Like, Trump has had 4 years in office where he's been able to demonstrate for 4 years what he can or can't, or the effect he has on the economy while being in office. And we're on a second time round, and we're not talking about, like you mentioned earlier, tens of millions of people that agree with what he says. We're talking about half the population. It's neck to neck when it comes to whether it's going to be Kamala, whether it's going to be Trump. It's a neck-to-neck battle. So it's like, why are there so many people in America that even after 4 years of what he's already, like, you know, been a part of, How are there still so many people convinced that he can do a better job than somebody else?
Well, the economy actually was pretty good when he was president, and inflation is so bad right now that people are just desperate for something different. And that's a pretty common political theme you see. It's just a pendulum swing. Like for example, I think it's Argentina. Argentina has gone back and forth between having like socialist presidents and anarcho-capitalist presidents. It goes one and then the other because they can't figure shit out, and the people just go, what we have now isn't working. So, whatever the opposite of what we're doing now, that's probably our only hope. And that's just it makes perfect sense. And you can't fault somebody for being like, yeah, I know that he says terrible things and whatever, but like, literally, we're trying to live. And I think that he gives us the best chance for that. You can think that they're wrong.
And
I think that they're wrong. I'm just saying it makes sense that they think that way.
it's just
because I want to
weird that
tie.
that's what
Oh,
politics
yeah,
have even
sorry, go
come
ahead.
to, though. No, I was just saying it's weird that that's what politics have come to. And like,
Yeah,
granted,
it's pretty silly.
it's always been like this to a degree, but I mean, what you look at 20, what was it, 16? Yeah, 2016. That's when it really was like, okay, well, shit has officially hit the fan. It's like this isn't even a debate anymore. They're just up there fucking insulting each other. It's like I don't hear anything about any policies at all from either side. I just hear them fucking bickering.
Yeah.
It's so weird. That's why I haven't even been interested in politics since I've been able to vote, because it's like, well, it seems like every time the options are between South Park said it best, a best a douchebag and a turd sandwich. I don't want either. I would just give me a different fucking option. I don't care.
Real quick,
Well,
Blue, I want to let you do your thing, but somebody in the chat here, GR, said something about like inflation's actually really low right now or whatever. Compared to if we compare where inflation is now versus last year or this quarter versus last quarter, it hasn't gone up. Maybe it's even gone down a fraction, but the year over year, the accumulated inflation now versus pre-pandemic is still extraordinarily high. If we have flat inflation for 5 years, food and housing is still far too expensive for most people. So this is a point that I hear people bring up, that inflation has calmed down. But unless it's negative for like 3 years, people are suffering really badly. So anyways, go ahead, Blue. And then I want to get off politics after we do this,
Yeah,
because
you know, that's exactly what I wanted to transition to, because we started talking about Andrew Tate, and you know, I even mentioned like Elon Musk, and these aren't political figures, right? Even though Elon is kind of really leaning and dabbling into that. But I think what sometimes Americans kind of misconstrue is that the economy, you know, how well the economy does, and they attribute it to whoever is in office, when it's a global thing. It's like globally we're being affected by, you know, things that are happening throughout the world, and everybody's being affected. I mean, even when it comes to mustard seeds, because of the Ukrainian war, you know, mustards was really difficult to grab at the store, because the seeds that were supposed to come from Ukraine, which apparently everything seems to come from Ukraine, without us knowing. But anyway, let me just put this in a global thing, where it's like, do I really think that Trump, Andrew Tate, like all these outspoken people, are on some whim of luck where they're just trying to appeal to like a niche group of people, or do they actually know what they're doing and what they're talking about? Because, like, I know
Well,
it's
they're
I'm
good.
sorry.
I think they're
Sorry for
good
that
manip
vocalization.
I think they're good manipulators. So in that sense, they know what they're talking about. They know what
But
they're
do you think it's
doing. But
purposeful? Do you think it's purposeful?
with
Do you think they're
him, with him,
aware?
yeah, because I mean, like, we know, like, his whole, like, what do you call it, lover boy agenda tactic or whatever. I think he knows damn
You're talking
well.
about Tate.
Yeah, I think he knows damn
Okay.
well what he's doing, and the whole, like, there are disaffected young men, and if he goes up there and acts like the alpha father figure or whatever, then people will gravitate toward him. I think he absolutely is doing that. Like, it's a calculated, deliberate thing he's doing.
I mean, again, I think it really depends, because then you look at people like Vitaly, who have also gotten popular, for all the wrong reasons, let me add. But I think they absolutely do most of this shit on purpose. Yes, of course, part of that's just ingrained in their personality, and to some degree, they really are just like that, right? I don't think you can avoid that. But I mean, like, fucking Elon Musk, if you look at the shit he says on Twitter, some of it is just like, what's the word I'm looking for? I don't know, for lack of better terms, I'll just say polarizing. And
On the
you can
spectrum?
tell how purpose.
No.
No, that's not what I was gonna go with. No, it's just very polarizing. And you can tell that there's a purpose to it. It's I mean, shit, the Trump versus Kamala thing, right? The whole poll he did. Well, it's Twitter, right? Twitter has become the exact opposite of what it used to be. So of course, on
Yeah,
that
right, yeah.
platform, you're going to have a biased fucking poll. And he knows that. There's no way he doesn't know that. And then he posts it, goes viral, and it, bolsters up support for Trump.
There's no
Like,
such thing
there
as
has to
bad
be.
publicity. That's kind of the philosophy that he's using there, I would guess.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, shit, when he said let's nuke Mars to get it to have an atmosphere, it's like, yeah, well, on paper, if you're blind, it might sound good, but that's in what fucking world does that actually work?
That's hilarious. Okay, so I wanted to talk about, I kind of wanted to talk about, funny enough, I wanted to talk about science education. So I, Globeman, when you were going to school, do you remember like what science classes did you take?
Yeah, so I did a physical science class, honors, physics, and I want to say biology. I think those were the three, because I only had to have 3 credits for it.
Oh, you only had to have three. So I took five. I took physical science as a freshman, biology as a sophomore, physics and anatomy and physiology as a junior, and then chemistry as a senior. So I bring this up because this is just what I've seen as a teacher here in California. They started doing this, well, they kind of started doing this everywhere. So when I first started teaching, as a freshman, you would take physical science, which is it's half physics, half chemistry, but a really basic version of it. You just get introduced to what is an atom, what are protons, neutrons, and electrons, just a tiny bit on the periodic table, just what energy and motion and waves, just like what these things are, right? You're not doing anything.
Building the base level.
Yeah, and I think that that was it. Well, okay. So, and then you would go into biology as a sophomore, and then typically chemistry or physics as a junior, you could pick. And then you could do electives like anatomy, physiology, earth science, whatever your school had to offer for the others. What they started doing, I first saw this in South Dakota, was they pushed physical science down into middle school, but not really, because middle schoolers, they basically learn biology and earth science. That's really it. There's really no chemistry or anything like that. They will like learn about atoms and things like that.
Yeah, but it's real basic.
Yeah. And then freshmen take biology. And then sophomores, now you're at a weird spot as a sophomore where it's like, what do I do? And then this has happened in California too. All freshmen take biology. It's not like this at every school. The first school I was at was different. Freshmen did not take biology. You waited until you were a sophomore. And I think freshmen can take biology and be successful. Juniors taking or sophomores taking chemistry has been catastrophic. It does not work. They are just not ready for it. And so the weird thing is, like, basically, in order for the school to be compliant, they're what we call the next generation science standards, right? And they basically cover three domains, but it's really kind of five because it's life science. So that's just biology. There's nothing in there for like learning anatomy and physiology, really. That's an elective. But there's the life science standards. Then there's the physical science standards. So that's everything you learn in chemistry and physics. And then there are the
Okay.
earth and space science standards. Now, the thing is, there are very few teachers who are like credentialed in the geosciences. for like an earth science. So the vast majority of schools around here, they don't even have an earth science class, but you're required to teach the standards to be compliant because it's on like the state, the standardized testing.
So they're asking you to wing it, basically.
Well, I'm going to tell you what the problem is. And then there are zero physics teachers. So almost no school has physics. So what do you do? Well, what they started doing was they'll do one of two things. They'll be like biology as a freshman, chemistry as a sophomore. And then the only kind of like electives they'll have will be anatomy and physiology or like some like sports medicine, like something they just kind of make up, which is interesting. Like it's cool. But they'll just outsource it and have them do something else, like with a college for like dual enrollment. And dual enrollment has really become a joke. We can maybe talk about that later, but I'll write that down just in case. But
Is
anyways,
earth science geography?
kind of, but a geography class would have to teach a lot of earth science standards, but not all of them, because the earth science standards include astronomy. So, and like fossil fuels. For a geography class, you would get all the stuff about climate. You could theoretically teach stuff about like mount plate tectonics, because you could talk about mountains and how they change the geography of a place, and you could go into earthquakes. You could make a geography class be kind of neat, but it would miss most of the stuff. So, anyways, with that track of you take biology as a freshman, chemistry as a sophomore, half of them fail it, and then they take it again as a junior. You haven't approached any of the earth science standards, and you've missed all of the physics standards in physical science. So the schools have realized this. So what they've started doing is this thing called integrated science. And this is what integrated science is. Well, technically, this is chemistry, but when we learn about chemical reactions, we're also going to throw plate tectonics in there. And it's like, oh my fuck. Would you enjoy a class like that?
Part of me wants to say, like, part of my brain might enjoy it because I'm the kind of person who would sit there on YouTube and watch, like, oh, 100 amazing facts about whatever. But then another part of me is like, well, if I have to actively study the material and try to remember this, yeah, it's just going to scramble it all. I'm not going to be able to just hone in on one topic.
Yeah, the way they do it, just it makes absolutely zero sense, because you can't actually throw earth science into a chemistry class. You can throw it into physics with astronomy. You can do astronomy and physics, and that would be great. You could, in a way, you could study earthquakes in a physics class, because you could just talk about the properties of seismic waves. But that is so little of what you learn in earth science. When are you gonna throw the rock cycle in there, the properties of minerals and things like that? There's nowhere in any of those classes where it works or makes any sense. For chemistry, if you somehow get to nuclear chemistry, you can learn radiometric dating and talk about the age of the Earth. And it's cool and fun to do that in a class, because like you take your boring chemistry lecture and you'd be like, hey, you know, in the real world we do this and this is how. But not many schools get into nuclear chemistry, especially when you have sophomores doing. Like, I can tell you, my first year teaching here in California, I taught chemistry to juniors, and the last couple of years I've taught chemistry, we barely do half of what I was able to teach my juniors. Because the pace I could go at with those juniors was just so much greater. Like, it takes the entire first semester just to get from what are atoms to what is the periodic table. I'm not kidding. It takes the entire semester. And it's just, it just, and so the chemistry pace is unbearably slow, and we have to try to figure out ways to also incorporate earth science stuff in there. It doesn't work. So what some schools do is they try to do this thing called integrated science. I already talked about this. And I've seen it done in different ways. Sometimes the class has like literally no underlying theme. I've seen it where they call it something like chemistry in the community. And it's technically chemistry, but every now and then they throw in stuff from whatever, whatever. Physics, earth science, whatever.
That sounds horrific.
Yeah, it really is. The other one is this more, they call it like phenomenon-based teaching. And I did a curriculum on it a few years ago, and I thought it was clunky and horrible and just not very substantive. But it's just this entire online thing where you start with something like the very first one was it tells a story about this tourist at Yellowstone National Park who fell into one of the hot springs and his entire body dissolved. So they hear the story, you play like news clips of it and stuff, and then you learn all of the science behind it. So you learn about chemical reactions, you learn about solubility in water, you learn about conservation of matter and energy, you learn about it's Yellowstone, so you learn about the interior of the earth and the heat that comes up. And like that sounds like cool, I'm bridging connections and blah blah blah. It doesn't work because students don't. It would work for somebody like you or I, somebody who's old, who knows this stuff, who watch YouTube videos for fun about this kind of thing. And we
It
can.
already kind of had the prerequisites.
Yes, they don't have that. They have almost none of that. And so for them, in their perspective, what it's just flying off the seat of their pants, and they just don't really get anything that you're doing. And I hate it so much. I just wish schools would just teach earth science, because you can get the physics is really hard, but we can get the physics in the earth science, most of it, and you can get a lot of it in chemistry. I just wish schools would do earth science, chemist or biology, chemistry. I do feel bad because, like, well, here's the other thing with California. You're only required to take 2 years of science. So the students
Oh, so you
only.
only need like two, full years, or is it 2 semesters?
Two full years. But like, if we do that, then I'm sorry, how on earth are they going to get taught all the standards that are put on the standardized test? And that's how we get our funding and all kinds of other stuff. You can't, but the school has to desperately try to do what it can. So they adopt these curricula and stuff that just try to throw the kitchen sink at it, and it just doesn't work.
And I understand from, I guess their point of view, right? It's like I understand that they're limited on certain resources. They have to work with what they have. But at the same time, it's like you're basically forcing the kids to try to cram all this knowledge that's completely unrelated. It's like if there's no structure to it, how are you going to be able to,
Yeah.
I don't know, connect the ideas, I guess. I mean,
In
I guess it's possible, but it just sounds like it's making it way, way more complicated than it needs to be.
theory, it sounds like a good idea. It even sounds fun and like cute, and it's got the what we call it's authentic, meaning like real world connections. In practice, it doesn't work at all. Now, I would say that I don't like the idea that like I think only requiring 2 years of science is totally awful. It should be three. But like, I don't like the idea of like setting it up for kids like, well, you're gonna be forced to take earth science, chemistry, and biology, and then you only get 1 year of freedom or whatever. That kind of I do understand where it's like I want them to have more freedom, but the deal is, the schools Most schools, their only science elective is anatomy and physiology. So it's not like they have much of a choice either. But I was going through this. I actually scheduled this. I looked at all the graduation requirements for California. So you have to, I made a spreadsheet actually of it. Here, I'm gonna, oh, you guys aren't.
Oh, fancy guy.
Yeah. You're not gonna be
We're
able
pulled out
to,
Excel.
you're not gonna be able to see it, but
I'm looking at your YouTube right now. I'll be able to see it there.
Okay, so here I'll put it on the screen. And this is what it looks like. I assumed a 7-period day, and I put all of the required things. So you have to take 3 years of English. You only have to take 2 years of math, 2 years of science, 3 years of social studies. You have to take a fine art, so that could be band or a foreign language or art. You only have to do one of those. And you have to do 2 years of PE. So if I write down just what you have to take, look at this. Your junior year is almost completely empty. Your senior year is completely empty. Now, I think that that's good, the latitude there for them to be able to pick like electives Or, you know, you can take more science if you want to. You can take more math if you want to. And most students that know they're going to go to college for something where they need it aren't dumb enough to just, you know, not do that. And you can like take the college enrollment classes. But like, you know, if we just required an additional math, an additional science, you know, if we just do that, then we still have so a student 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, 13. A student still gets to pick 13 classes that are customized for them in whatever way. Now, like if they're in band, then, you know, that would fill up. They would be in band every single year, right? So that takes a little bit of it away. But, you know, that's a choice that they make. They're happy to do that. So I look at this and I'm scratching my head like, is that really like,
That's it.
yeah. So, like, part of it is, you know, why are we doing so badly? I was like, well, have we been lowering our expectations and our standards for years? Yes, that's what you should expect. What students are going to perform overall close to the average. And if you're if the average expectation is low, that's where people are going to end up. And there's this horrible fear that if we increase the standards, it's going to leave more people behind. But I don't know if that's really actually necessarily the case, because I think when you kick people in the butt, most of the time they respond to it. But also, I think there's a little bit of this is going to sound very odd for an educator to say, but do you have to graduate high school in the traditional way? Like, I don't think we should have a society where that's it shouldn't be as emphasized as it is. By all means, get a degree in some way. I think that's obviously better. But when we're saying everybody has to graduate, it's almost like this, it's almost elitist in a weird way. But when you say everybody has to graduate, well, the only way to get that equitable pipe dream across is to lower the standards so that people that aren't making it make it. And that just makes literally everything worse. You think you're lifting up the bottom, but what you're actually doing is dragging the entire bell curve down. And I think it's no mistake that we're seeing what we're seeing, or no accident.
Yeah, and I mean, even thinking back to when I was in school, let's see, we had to do 4 years of English. That was just required. So all 4 years we did that. We had 3 years of math. I don't remember what it was. I think it was just Algebra 1, Algebra 2, and then we had a choice for what we wanted to do after. Oh yeah, and geometry was somewhere in there. I don't remember. Between one of the two, I think. And then I couldn't tell you the electives, but pretty much everything was either 3 or 4 credits. Like we had to do it the entire time we're there. And
Yeah.
I think that helped me at least. I mean, you know, I was a shitty kid, right? I was getting in all sorts of trouble, but you know, I think I turned out okay. I'm not as dumb as some of the people I know, so I figure that's a plus.
Last time I looked this up, what state would you guess is, I can't remember if it was, I can't remember if it's graduation rate or just high school performance in general. I think it was high school performance in general. What state do you think performs the best?
I'm gonna take a random stab at Oregon.
Nope.
Illinois. Montana.
Yes. Last I looked at
Actually,
this, I don't remember if it was, it's either graduation rate or like high school academic, like achievement performance. Montana was number one. And I was like, that seems a little bit weird. But then I thought, well, I mean, it's a small population, it's a much more homogeneous population. And I think that, you know, a kind of semi more traditional place like that just emphasizes this kind of thing more than other places do. Now it's funny because dead last is Texas. And, you know, Montana, Texas, they're both like Republican pretty deeply, but I think in different ways. But second to last, California. And so we keep lowering expectations and standards, and look what happens. We're second worst. So there you go. I'm gonna see if I can find specifically where that was. High school graduation rate. West Virginia, that's not even remotely possible.
You know, I think Montana's probably on top though, because there's like six people there.
Yeah, that definitely has something to do with it.
I only know one person from Montana, and I think they might be the only person that lives there. I've never heard of anybody else being like, oh yeah, never gonna guess what happened in Montana.
Oh yeah, here it is. Okay, I'll put this on the screen. This looks different than the site I looked at first, but there you go. Montana, number one. Wyoming, really high. Again, very, very small population, very homogenous population, not very many English language learners. And that's not an indictment on them, but can you imagine trying to learn content in a language that's not your first language? That's not going to be easy at all. And then,
It'd
yeah.
be impressive if they were number one though, with that kind of rate. That'd be crazy.
Oh, yeah. So it looks like California, according to this, we're dead last. And then Texas is second tourist. And then Mississippi, that makes perfect sense. Louisiana, that makes sense. New Mexico is such a weird state. I don't get why New Mexico has so many problems. It's just odd. This is a
Don't know.
weird map.
I think Alejandro in the comment section touches on an interesting point of debate, to be honest.
People think the purpose of high school should be prepare people for the job market, but that's wrong. The purpose of education should be to nurture your knowledge of the world and critical thinking. So I think the industrial model kind of is how school got started. And I think that worked, but yeah, I think we should kind of reinvent school so that it matches the real world. Now, how do I say this? Like, school turned into getting you ready for college, but obviously the college model has failed dramatically as well because it's saddling people with debt who can't get jobs, and most jobs don't require a 4-year degree. I think there should be an emphasis on trade schools and 2-year colleges and things like that. But there should also be a huge inf or a shift toward just being in a trade. Like literally, you can be an electrician or a plumber and have a 6-figure job that requires absolutely zero formal education. It requires that you know what you're doing, but you can literally just do that through an internship. And so how do you make school a reflection of that? Well, I don't think we should get rid of subjects and just teach critical thinking, how to do your taxes, stuff like that, because I think that would be unbearably boring. But I think that education and what my approach, when I became aware of this years ago, I shifted my focus to, yes, we are learning the science, but I need to realize, I need to put my ego and my interests aside and realize you guys are going to forget probably almost all the science, but there needs to be something you get out of this. So I really emphasize the critical thinking and how to use information. So like when my students tell me like, when are we going to need this in real life? I say, what? Solve problems every single day. And I'm here to make you really, really good at that kind of thing. You know,
But
you.
isn't there like a break where they question, like, why am I learning this? And there seems to be a lack of correlation, right? Like they can't link it to real life problems, which they're probably going through on a day-to-day basis. It's nothing new. It's not like suddenly they become an adult and they have to solve problems. Even as kids, they have to solve problems, right? So why is there like this gap, this lack of correlation between like, oh, why are you teaching me about the equation of like, why do I have to solve this shit? And you're like, well, because, in future in life, you're going to have to figure out, when you're trying to do a recipe at home and it's a recipe for five, but you're only two people. Like, how are you going to, those are the real life examples that I have found myself realizing, like, oh, the shit that I learned at school kind of helped me create a pancake for two instead of for five. You know what I mean?
I mean, I think the critical thinking, problem solving, and just general intelligence translates to the real world in it in everything. Like, 'cause the thing about the real world is how often are you going to encounter problems or scenarios that you've never encountered before? Almost every single day. So we couldn't possibly create a curriculum that is going to prepare you for that stuff, because literally almost every single day, it's going to be things that have never happened before. So what we need to just do is just make sure you foundationally have the prerequisite skills or whatever to be able to just be in general a very good problem solver. And then in today's world, you need to be also a very good disseminator of information, because that might be the biggest existential threat we face. So I think
And
that's what education, and I think you can teach kids science and just focus on those things, because in the past it's been the model for teaching has been, I'm going to sit up here and I'm going to give you a lecture. I'm going to tell you all the science. You're going to memorize the science. And then on the test, you're going to remember what you memorized so that when you go to college and they say this, that, and the other thing, you're like, oh, I know what that is. I've heard that before. That is boring. That for students, you should hate that. You should protest against that. And as a teacher, it's just deeply unsafe. I did that for a couple years, and then I realized that it was just so unbelievably uninteresting for students. And I feel really bad about those first couple of years. But if they're engaged in the process and all that kind of stuff, then it's going to build their general intelligence and make them successful in life.
I feel like with the college
Well,
model though that you
interesting.
brought up before, it fucking what was it? You said that school now, like high school for example, it tries to prepare you for college.
That's
It,
philosophically, that's
it's
what every teacher and especially administrator, that's what they're going to say because
oh yeah.
politically it sounds good and it looks good. And they probably do believe that that's because it's all about like, if you don't go to college, you're going to make over the course of your life, you'll make $1 million fewer. And that's not good. It's like, yeah, but not everybody can go to college because not every job requires a degree. So you're like literally creating. You're kind of creating a tragedy of the commons also almost when you do that. But anyways, go on.
And you brought up how it puts people in, this debt that they're going to be, trying to dig themselves out of for who knows how long.
Yeah.
But I mean, this might sound weird, using a comedian as my source, but there was this comedy bit I was listening to the other night, and he was like, "Well, look, right? If I have enough money to go to college, I figure I'm already doing pretty well for myself.
At this
It's
point,
like I don't
yeah.
want to go take out a loan. I don't want to have to owe money to the bank for the rest of my life. It's like, but if I just have the money, I'm not going to school. Clearly, I'm already doing something right."
Yeah. And like 25% of people drop out of college after like 1 year, I think. It's like college graduation rates, I think, are only 50%. But let's go to the internet and figure that out.
And
Like
I
half
think
the
part of that
people
has
that go
to,
to
are you your
college
first?
actually graduate.
Yeah.
I think part of it, though, is people not knowing what they want to go to college for. I can't tell you how many friends I've had that have gone to school and they're like, they didn't go for the prerequisites. They tried to hop headfirst into some field that they thought they were interested in just to find out, like, hey, this is actually really boring and I don't want to do this.
So
Maybe.
for all
Not good.
institutions, it says 64%, but this says 6 year graduation rate.
Wow.
64%. Okay, so that's a little bit better than I thought it was. The for private for-profit colleges, it's fucking 29%.
Wow.
That's insane. Overall, it's 64. For public, it's 63. For private nonprofit, it's 68. And private for-profit colleges, 29% graduation rate. That's pretty
I
crazy.
wonder if there's Wonder if there's anything showing like people going back to college after they had initially left. Wonder what the graduation rate would be there, I guess, for like returning
That's yeah,
people.
I feel like that might be really hard to quantify. What else does this? 2-year institutions, graduation rate. Yeah, I don't want to, I can't read all this. But this
Well,
what is
if you
this? This is
don't
really
if you don't
low.
mind me asking, Peterson, like what's the question here? What's the 'cause other than the frustration of teaching something you feel like is unnecessary, like what's the bigger picture you're looking at here? I'm asking for the chat as well.
Oh, I don't know.
What's the
We
discussion?
were just
What's the discussion?
riffing. I was just going over how I think the way we do science education in this country sucks. And then we started talking about how we've lowered standards to try to reach everybody, but all that's really doing is making us a nation of underachievers. And then we
I mean,
started talking about graduation rates, and then I don't know.
okay.
I just think
And
we should expect, I think we should reinvent the educational wheel in a way. And I've seen places where it's done pretty well, where there's this huge emphasis on what the students are doing and forcing the students to prove that they learned something like every day instead of just lecturing to them. And then you take the test and it's like, well, half of you failed, so I guess you get kids need to listen better next time. And it's like, no, you're making them do something unbearable. That's what the
Well,
actual problem is.
I think that's a really interesting thing that you could elaborate on is like what do you think would make for a better educational system?
I don't think the educational system even needs to be I think a school could literally keep everything they do the same. What I would like to see is I think what would be important is better funded and better invested and better facilities for arts. And that would include stuff like shop class. I mean, the most scientific class I ever took was shop class because I did things every single day. Crap broke. It didn't work. I had to basically, in an experimental sort of way, figure out how to get it to work. And you made things and you were proud of them. So, that would be one. And as far as it's like structurally changing things, that would be one big thing. But in order to just make education better, you don't. I don't think you have to do any of that stuff. You can keep the crit. You can be like, yeah, you teach world history as sophomores. That's great. Just keep teaching world history. Don't buy a new book. I'm not here to like sell you something. It's just that. So like, for example, what I do, I don't, when I teach, I don't stand up there and I give a lecture and have them write down notes. Instead, what I do is I give them, maybe I'll give them the slides. And they take the notes on their own. And what I do is I put a list of questions that when they're done, they have to answer and they have to prove, they have to back up their answers with information they learned today. So maybe it's from a video, maybe it's from an article, maybe it's just from taking notes, but they literally have to take the information you give them and do something with it that day. Because typically, what education has been is, like I said, lecturing. Or there's like a I do, you do, we do thing. So like the teacher will do an example of, well, here's how you factor a polynomial or something. I don't even know if that's a real thing, but the teacher does it on the whiteboard and everybody just copies what the teacher does. And it's like, oh, they did it. It's like, not really, because if you gave me Chinese, I could copy it verbatim and I have no idea what it means or what it says. So if you can redo the edumacation process basically in a way similar to like what I said, where it's we call it academic or we call it I mean, call it different things, but like I call it academic accountability, I guess, where it's on the students, then that's I think the best thing for them. They're getting more bang for their buck, I guess.
I don't know, it's
Okay,
I'm
fair
trying to
enough.
think 'cause I just got out of school, what, 2018. So it hasn't been that long. And again, obviously from state to state it differs, but I mean for the most part it felt like what they did at my school was fine. Right? I feel like I was given the information I needed. I felt like it set me up pretty well. But that also comes down to how, I don't know, how willing the teacher is to work individually with students. Because I've had teachers that don't want to do that at all. They say, here's the textbook, read it, here's a package, or a package, here's a packet, whatever the hell, fill it out.
Yeah, that's
And
not
it's like,
good.
okay. Yeah, it's like, okay, that's wonderful, right? If you want people to just learn from the source material and not understand what the fuck is going on, that's fine. But then you had the other teachers who would actually take the time to like sit down and help you with the answers. It's weird. It really comes down to obviously the willingness to learn, but obviously willingness to teach. And there are some teachers that I've had, and I'm sure that you've ran into even in your job, that you just look at and you're like, why are you even in this job? You don't seem to enjoy it at all.
Because they want to be a soccer coach. That's a huge reason
was my
for,
algebra teacher.
yeah, you'll have there's one teacher at every school that's there because they want to coach. Then that's almost the entire reason for it.
He was a football coach,
Well,
and
I
my
just
God, he
want to
was terrible
touch
at algebra.
I want to touch on the schooling system, which like if I have to guesstimate, I think for the last 150 to almost to like 200 years has not changed. We've been teaching in schools since the 19th century, and it's been particularly influenced by the Industrial Revolution, where it's like you sit in a class, you got to listen, you got to understand, and you just got to do, right? You don't question, you just do what you're told. And I think that a lot of teachers, I mean, I had a very impactful teacher, was an English teacher, that made me feel like what I was doing and what I was writing and the stories that I was writing was unique and different and special. And so you wonder, like, okay, to go to what you said, Globe Man, it's like, what's the point of these teachers, right? Like, are they passionless? Are they just kind of being robotic? Do they not care? But how far can we really, really, really push an agenda when it comes to learning to learn? Because I feel like that's what it's all about, right? You're just learning to learn, whether it be with algebra, whether it be with biology, whether it be with geometry. It's trying to give as much stimuli to a child or to a developing being and being like, hey, here are the different methods that you can learn to learn so that when you do find something you are passionate about, you can actually go for it and learn.
Yeah, I could see that. And
Yeah.
I mean, what was it that you said before, Peterson? I mean, we're just dropping the standard, right? So we can try to bring everyone along with. And I mean, look no further than a TikTok comment section. You'll have people saying the most unintelligible things that I've ever heard, are relevant rants about shit that wasn't even part of the topic. People who can't spell anything at all. And it's honestly scary because I look at those people and it's like, you guys are the same age as me. It's like, but we're
Yeah,
living vastly different lives.
I remember even like before the pandemic, listening to a guy that's been really influential to me is Jonathan Haidt. He's a psychologist, and he wrote Coddling of the American Mind, which is a really, really great book. But he talks about, he's interviewed professors and things. And again, even before the pandemic, college professors were coming out all over the country and being like, my students can't do this stuff. I've been teaching the same thing for 20 years, which without getting into doing the same thing for 20 years maybe isn't the best thing ever, but it's relevant because if you've been doing the same thing for 20 years and people have been able to do the work, understand the material or whatever, then all of a sudden if that changes, that means that something else fundamentally changed. And I don't want to get into this rabbit hole, but I think the time on screens might be the most harmful thing. That's part of it, but yeah, just
1,000%.
but the lowering of expectations, I think, is another huge thing. And the no consequences for bad behavior isn't a. I don't know if this actually went through, but the state of California was being sued to remove all like CCTV cameras from schools because it's an invasion of privacy. It's like, you know who's gonna love that? Criminals. And it's like, sorry, but you can be a bad person and a criminal and be a teenager. It's possible. And they know exactly what they can and can't get away with. And all they do is target what lax rules have come about. It's just, it's the most obvious thing ever. But yeah, that's been, it's now a thing where you can't discipline a child. You can't suspend them or anything for anything that they say. It's not, or well, actually just for behavior in general. You're not allowed to do that. They would have to actually like break a pretty serious crime, like commit assault or something like that, or be selling drugs for that. So if a student during lunch stands up on his lunch table and says the most disgusting, horrendous, or even like possibly racist thing, although they may be like, well, that's where we cross the line in some places. Or, you know, a student can sit there in class and while their teacher is lecturing, just go, fuck you, fuck you, fuck you, fuck you, fuck you, fuck you. Like, you can kick them out of class, but you can't discipline them for that. It's illegal. And
that's ridiculous. What the fuck?
Yeah. And I remember bringing this up years ago, and this lady who she had a PhD in education, which I wouldn't even wipe my ass with one of those, is she was like, well, I said exactly what you said. I think I said that's so dumb. But she said, well, actually it isn't, because it increases the odds that the kid will drop out from school. And I didn't say anything, but I was like, you know what's vastly worse than increasing the odds that some degenerate person will drop out of school? Teaching them that there aren't consequences for your behaviors. That's vastly worse. So I didn't say that, but
I got slapped by a teacher.
Oh yeah, like, well, they shouldn't do that. I don't believe in corporal punishment. But
well, I'm 30. I'm
bring back the damn paddle.
And I must have been 12, 13 years old, and the teacher told me to sit outside of the classroom because I was being disruptive, and I decided to open the classroom door and flip him the finger, and he literally jumped over his desk.
Wow.
And I ran outside. He grabbed me and slapped me.
Yeah, that's not okay. But
I mean, look, man, like, I'm 36. I look back at it and I think, like, I deserve that slap. I really do. I mean,
it,
how
to an extent you gotta say it taught you a lesson. I'm sure it might not have been the best way to teach you the lesson, but it taught it damn well, I bet.
I mean, that teacher must have emotionally been invested. I mean, he was so frustrated with me that he's like, you know what? Sit outside.
This is for your own good. Sit
outside. Because he made me, and you as a teacher, please tell me, Peterson, if you as a teacher decide to put a student right next to you, where you're like, you know what? Your desk is going to be next to my desk. What kind of psychological effect do you think that's going to have on that student? Because that's what that teacher did. He thought he couldn't control me to the point where he's like, you're going to sit next to me right now. You're going to face the entire classroom with me. You're going to sit next to me. And that's how bad of a student you are. It didn't make me feel like a bad student.
When I was a teacher in South Dakota toward the end for a couple years, I actually put my desk in the middle of the classroom. So the desks were in rows. It was typically three desks in a row, but they were like lab tables. So you'd have six students, three rows or rows with three tables there. I got it out that time. So it'd be the front row, the middle row, or not middle. The front two rows would just be three student lab table desks. The middle one was my desk in the middle, and then a table on each side. And then usually there were two more rows behind me. And I sat in the middle, and the people I put next to me were people that I couldn't trust not to be next to me, because if you don't want to learn, if you want to fail my class on purpose, I don't care. But you don't have this is something I wish people would berate students about. And yes, I do think there needs to be shaming and berating for certain things. And
slapping?
No, not that. But literally every person has a constitutionally guaranteed right to an education, of an equal education. And if you come in there every single day and you won't act right, you are taking away other people's education, which is, it's actually a crime. I mean, it's not a crime if they're doing it, but it should be thought of like that. It shouldn't be thought of that way in terms of punishment, but it should be taken that seriously. And it's not by most people. So I did that because I knew
these
people.
Are you suggesting that teaching is out of your control?
No.
In a way, because you're saying that they're getting into your classroom, they don't want to learn. It's out of your control.
Oh yeah, I mean I can't make them want to learn. I mean, I've actually had really good luck with students that are kind of shitheads in other classes. I had this one kid, I remember this is so long ago, is when I first started teaching, but he got into screaming fights and he would throw crap at other teachers. And I didn't know this because he was so good in my classroom. And it was just something about me being younger and having that kind of sense of humor, I guess, being more relatable 100%, with them.
That's what it was.
But I remember I was, he would go to like a, it wasn't exactly a study hall, but he had this one class every day where this one teacher only would work with like three or four students at a time. And these are students that are at severe risk of like not graduating. It's kind of like a credit recovery class is basically what it was. And she came up to me toward the end of the year and she said, I can't remember the kid's name, but she's like, he said, oh, I like Mr. Peterson's class. And my jaw hit the floor. He has never said that he likes any class ever before. I was like, oh, well, I don't even know what I did, but that's nice. So anyways, there you will get stories like that. But like I've had, for every one of those, there's 10, this kid that sits there and does absolutely nothing and never will because of things that you don't have control over. Usually it's because their home life is absolutely horrible or, you know, something
else. It's interesting you touch on that because it feels like education starts at home, right? So how do we bleed that into, for, again, I want to reinforce the fact that we've been doing this for 200 fucking years.
You can't do it at the school. I've completely, and there's a book called Blueprint by Robert Plowman that I think every teacher should read. But so I sort mm-hmm. of, this is the most like nihilistic, pessimistic thing I believe in, but the schools matter. But in general, they just don't make a difference. And we know this because we study twins who've been separated at birth and their academic outcomes, no matter if they're adopted by somebody who cooks meth in their basement or a billionaire, their educational outcomes on average are the same. And anecdotally, you can anecdotally disprove that, but an anecdote doesn't actually prove or disprove anything. On average, that's the case. So what we do with what people do to teachers and to schools and expect of them is they think the school is the environment. That is where the things that will guide and help a student in education are going to happen. No, you spend a school year is 180 days. That's less than half of the days in a year, and it's 8 hours a day. Really, it's only really closer to like 6.5. So we are spending, they spend very little of their time here. And no matter what we do at school, it doesn't change what's happening in their home life. So I think like the best thing we could possibly do is in this country, what we have to figure out is get parents to be less desperate about their financial situations and figure out ways to help try to keep families together, because that's advantageous for anybody. People on the left would be like, he said something about the nuclear family. That means he doesn't want gay people to adopt. No, it doesn't mean anything like that. But it's like just so obviously true that a child is better off the more resources they have. And are there anecdotes? Is there the, well, my parents were divorced and I went to Harvard? Yep. An anecdote doesn't prove or disprove anything. So that, I feel like, is the only hope that there is. And I don't want to get into this, but I think probably like a UBI program would be the best possible thing we could do, because it would tackle so many problems and help people in so many ways. And it's just an extremely, it wouldn't be easy to implement, but it's just this one universal thing that you do, instead of like, well, for this group we're going to do that, and for this group we're going to do that, and we're going to have a dedicated department of the whatever for this group of people, so that they, like, no, everybody just gets this benefit, and it unilaterally helps everybody. How about that? So.
Well, first of all, I want to say we almost have 60 people watching right now, and I think everybody should give this a thumbs up, because these are good topics, and be sure to voice yourself in the comments. Really, really, really do. Yeah, man, I you know what, Peterson, I agree with a lot of what you're saying. I just wonder, like, what part of responsibility do we want to take into, you know, there's a saying that I really, really love, and I deeply adhere to, is it takes a village to raise a child. Where,
right.
It's like, are we really going to just dismiss the ability a child might have? And you were surprised by someone saying, like, hey, I really love learning with Peterson, I think is what we're trying to say, just encapsulate that. But at the same time, I'm like thinking, like, fuck, like, what can we really do? How can we really connect? And I think this is an awesome is being live and doing live streams and talking about these type of topics. Man, I really wondered, like, how far can we push the agenda as to kind of tip that scale of, like, learning to learn? Because I really love that saying. Like, I love the fact that we go to school and it's all these random topics and all these random, learn to learn. And then find something you connect with. Because some kid in a science class is going to connect with that and want to become a scientist. And he's going to be passionate about it. And he's going to really, like, connect with that. And he's going to be in awe about it. And then you're using the masses as, like, well, most people don't really give a fuck about physics, so fuck them. So I don't know. I'm just wondering, like, as a teacher, at what point do you feel like you can really make a difference?
I'm not 100% sure how to respond to that. I mean, the thing about, like schools and teachers, they matter, but on average, they don't end up making a difference, because you don't know. Like, I think school is a huge part of the story, but you don't know specifically, if I do this, will it lead to that outcome? So what we have to do, what I think teachers have to do, is they have to be fair. I think they should be, if you can't be inspiring, at least be interesting. And if you can't be inspiring or interesting, at least know what you're talking about. I had teachers that I had massive respect for, and I acted well in their class, not really because they were particularly riveting, but because I could see in them, like, this person's like a freaking genius, right? And then I had other teachers. I had this one teacher, she was, because I went to a tiny school where there were 20 kids per class on average, they didn't have somebody to teach history, world history, for sophomores, so they had the middle school music teacher do it, because that was the only option. She was hopeless, she didn't know anything. I knew more than her, but every single day she made coming to class so enjoyable and fun that I was just like, I love this person. What, oh God, what was her name? It was Mrs. Hildebrandt. It was something like that. And she was great. So I guess my very simple answer is just be a good person. And also you have to know what works. Like, it, the teaching should be kind of like a science. I mean, any job you should how do I say it? Like, if you want to be good at any job, you have to understand, like, quote unquote, the science of it. And I think that teaching is no different. I got to wrap up here, but closing statements.
Love it. You're a beta. I was gonna say, I call me simple-minded. I think the easiest fix, and obviously far easier said than done, just stop hiring fucking boring people. Because I mean, well, for example, they might be. I get it, right? That's obviously not realistic, but I think of it. Look at, again, I'll use TikTok as an analogy, right? Look at someone like Bob the Science Guy. He's an older guy. He's very passionate about what he does. He knows all the, you know, little nooks and crannies, all the details he needs to know. But if I was 16 years old trying to listen to him, it's like, yeah, he's a likable guy, but dude, I would fall asleep. Versus, you know, I listen to someone like Blitz, right? Yeah, he's talking about concepts I don't understand, but he's, I don't know, I guess more exciting. He actually tries to, What's the word for it? I don't know, for lack of better terms, he tries to make it more involved, right? To where people can interact with it, ask questions, stop, you know, at that moment and clarify. Versus in class, kind of hard to do that without derailing what's already happening.
Yeah. I mean, probably nobody learned anything from Bill Nye. They didn't carry that knowledge with them, but it made them love learning and science. And that is as important.
I don't think there really is a simple solution, unfortunately.
I think that the teacher, whoever's teaching, when they have a fundamental passion in what they do, and it goes beyond just what is, but rather on what's passing on, and be like, you know what? What's made me passionate about life? And not necessarily the topic, not necessarily science, not necessarily geography, but just like, you know, I'm passionate about life. I'm passionate about knowledge. I'm passionate about being a human being, and I want to pass that on. And when you do that, I think that's where you really touch and where you really connect with students and people, because that's how I connected with a teacher, when that teacher really showed me that they were absolutely connecting with what I was doing, regardless of how good or bad it was. They showed interest, you know.
That's kind of gay, but whatever. All right. I'll see you guys next time.